नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 22 टेक्स्ट 8। इट्स अ प्रोज टेक्स्ट, सो वी विल रीड द ट्रांसलेशन परपोट। ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। अबाउट द रेज ऑफ द सनशाइन बाय अ डिस्टेंस ऑफ 100,000 योजनास, दैट इज 800,000 माइल्स, इज द मून, which travels at a speed faster than that of the sun. In two lunar fortnights, the moon travels through the equivalent of a samvatsara of the sun, and in 2.25 days, it passes through a month of the sun, and in one day, it passes through a fortnight of the sun. Purport. When we take into account that the moon is 100,000 yojanas, or 800,000 miles above the rays of the sunshine, it is very surprising that the modern excursions to the moon could be possible. Since the moon is so distant, how space vehicles could go there is a doubtful mystery. Modern scientific calculations are subject to one change after another, and therefore they are uncertain. We have to accept the calculations of the Vedic literature. These Vedic calculations are steady. The astronomical calculations made long ago and recorded in the Vedic literature are correct even now. Whether the Vedic calculations or modern ones are better may remain a mystery for others. But as far as we are concerned, we accept the Vedic calculations to be correct. The authorities have requested us to finish this entire chapter, so we'll continue with the translations till the end of the chapter. Translation to text 9. When the moon is waxing, the illuminating portions of it increase daily, thus creating day for the demigods and night for the pitas. When the moon is waning, however, it causes night for the demigods and day for the pitas. In this way, the moon passes through each constellation of stars in 30 muhurtas, an entire day. The moon is the source of nectarian coolness that influences the growth of food grains, and therefore the moon god is considered the life of all living entities. He is consequently called Jiva, the chief living being within the universe. Text 10, translation. Because the moon is full of all potentialities, it represents the influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The moon is the predominating deity of everyone's mind, and therefore the moon god is called Manomaya. He is also called Annamaya because he gives potency to all herbs and plants. And he is also called Amritmaya because he is the source of life for all living entities. The moon pleases the demigods, pitas, human beings, animals, birds, reptiles, trees, plants, and all other living entities. Everyone is satisfied by the presence of the moon. Therefore, the moon is also called Sarvamaya, all-pervading. Translation to text 11. There are many stars located 200,000 yojanas, that is 1,600,000 miles above the moon. By the supreme will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are fixed to the wheel of time, and thus they rotate with sound with Mount Sumeru on their right, their motion being different from that of the sun. There are 28 important stars headed by Abhijit. Purport. The stars referred to herein are 1600,000 miles above the sun, and thus they are 4,000 miles above the earth. Translation to text 12. Can somebody switch off this fan, please? Translation to text 12. Some 1600,000 miles above this group of stars is the planet Venus, which moves at almost exactly the same pace as the sun, according to swift, slow, and moderate movements. Sometimes Venus moves behind the sun, sometimes in front of the sun, and sometimes along with it. Venus nullifies the influence of planets that are obstacles to rainfall. Consequently, its presence causes rainfall, and it is therefore considered very favorable for all living beings within the universe. This has been accepted by learned scholars. Translation to text 13. Mercury is described to be similar to Venus in that it moves sometimes behind the sun, sometimes in front of the sun, and sometimes along with it. It is 1600,000 miles above Venus, or 7,200,000 miles above the Earth. Mercury, which is the sun of the moon, is almost always very auspicious for the inhabitants of the universe. But when it does not move along with the sun, it forebodes cyclones, dust, irregular rainfall, and waterless clouds. In this way, it creates fearful conditions due to inadequate or excessive rainfall. Translation to text 14. Situated 1600,000 miles above Mercury, or 8800,000 miles above the Earth, is the planet Mars. If this planet does not travel in a crooked way, it crosses through each zodiac, each sign of the zodiac, in 3 fortnights, and in this way travels through all 12, one after another. It almost always creates unfavorable conditions in respect to rainfall and other influences. Translation to text 15. Situated 1600,000 miles above Mars, or 10,400,000 miles above the Earth, is the planet Jupiter, which travels through one sign of the zodiac within the period of Parivatsara. If its movement is not curved, the planet Jupiter is very favorable to the Brahmanas of the universe. Translation text 16. Situated 1600,000 miles above Jupiter, or 12,000,000 miles above the Earth, is the planet Saturn, which passes through one sign of zodiac in 30 months and covers the entire zodiac circle in 30 Anuvatsaras. This planet is always very inauspicious for the universal situation. Text 17. Situated 8800,000 miles above Saturn, or 20,800,000 miles above the Earth, are the 7 saintly sages who are always thinking of the well-being of the inhabitants of the universe. They circumambulate the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu, known as Dhruvaloka, the pole star. Purport. Srila Madhvacharya quotes the following verse from Brahmanda Purana. Jnanan Tatmano Vishnu Shishumara Vapushyataha Urdhvalokeshu Savyapta Adityadyastadashrita. Lord Vishnu, who is the source of knowledge and transcendental bliss, has assumed the form of Shishumara in the seventh heaven, which is situated in the topmost level of the universe. All the other planets, beginning with the sun, exist under the shelter of this Shishumara planetary system. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 22nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Orbits of the Planets. In the verse today, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, in the 5th canto, in this chapter, is challenging the concept that human beings on this planet Earth feel confident about when they see this universe with their senses. Because in this verse, it is explained that the rays, that above the rays of the sunshine, by a distance of 100,000 yojanas, that is 800,000 miles, is the moon, which travels much, much faster than the sun. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, we have to adopt the calculation of the Vedic literature. Whether the Vedic calculations or modern ones are better may remain a mystery for others. But as far as we are concerned, we accept the Vedic calculations as correct. So, this might thoroughly challenge our thought process, our convictions based on our observation of this universe. In fact, the modern science of astrophysics, which is a combination of physics applied to astronomy, describes nature on such a level of precision which was never approached in previous times. Previously, astronomy, or the understanding of this universe, began with just some people looking up into the sky, wondering, twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are, up above the world so high. What is it? Like a diamond in the sky, you know, something like that. So just a little interesting wonder into something twinkling in the sky, what's happening there. And then gradually, when physics, the understanding of how matter is working, was applied to astronomy, then nature revealed such wonders to modern man, and it established so many new concepts which were never even dreamt of by the earlier thinkers of modern astronomy. So these dynamic developments in modern science, specifically astrophysics, is a stark contrast to the static Vedic worldview. In the Vedic worldview, many elementary features of the universe are described. For example, some idea is given about the map of the earth or the map of India, Bharatvarsha. Although Bharatvarsha is spoken of sometimes as the earth, the map available is mostly of the region of the Ganges, and most of the kings' descriptions have been given of being near the river Ganga or Jamuna, Hastinapur. Or simple understanding of the seven planets, the seven primary planets, like the sun, the moon, Mars, Jupiter, Venus, like we read in the present purports of this chapter, which talks about the orbits of the planets of the universe. So only elementary features are explained in the Vedic worldview. Plus, It has so many unverifiable ideas, which modern thinkers say is a hindrance to progress. It talks about a huge jambu tree, which has a big jambu fruit, which when falls, gives a nice lake of jambu. In fact, a river, flowing river of jambu juice. Jambu Nadi. And there are wonderful big mangoes, which when fall, create mango rivers. What to speak of, sometimes people can take mango with spoon, and if it's a feast with unlimited mango juice, then you can take with cup. Here you can bathe and swim across a river of mango juice. Unverifiable ideas, which is a hindrance to progress of humanity. So, why does the Vedic static model explain such, first of all, simplistic ideas about the universe, about the planets, about the earth, about India, and on the other hand, unverifiable ideas which are just too much for the modern mind to even grasp, what to speak of, explain or understand. Distances. So, this challenge that modern astrophysics puts towards the Vedic worldview can be understood and replied to if we understand two things. The fundamental goals and the fundamental assumptions of the Vedic worldview and modern astrophysics, that is physics or science applied to astronomy, are so different, and therefore the scientific development and the cultural advancement is radically very different in the Vedic world and in the modern scientific world. So if these two things are understood, that the fundamental assumptions or the principles behind the Vedic worldview and the fundamental assumptions behind the modern worldview are so different, also the goals of the study are so different, then one can try to understand why these two exist so much in almost opposite directions. So we'll take each one of them one by one. The fundamental assumptions or the principles behind Vedic cosmology or Vedic worldview is that reality can be understood only partially. Reality can only be partially understood through the endeavors of one's limited senses and mind. That's a fundamental assumption of Vedic cosmology. That we will never, ever, ever be able to understand the entire universe with its complexities with our limited mind and senses. Therefore, the Vedic descriptions, they stress more on the existence of higher realms of beings. And since these realms of beings cannot anyway be understood by our limited mind and senses, the Vedas, they just give a general description of those higher realms of reality and of higher personalities. They don't give exact scientific descriptions because anyway they can't be understood by our limited mind and senses. And that's a fundamental assumption. For those who want to directly know those higher beings, for them a process is given. The yogic process of advancement. By the yogic process of advancement, one can raise one's level of consciousness and get in touch with these higher beings. And therefore understand those higher realities at those levels of consciousness. So therefore, the whole human endeavor is channelized to the purification of the person, to the inner development of one's potential, ultimately up to the awakening of the spirit soul and the relationship of the soul in the rasa tattva with Krishna. Awakening of the ecstatic loving relationships of the soul with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, the human endeavor is saved from exploiting the environment by gross equipments. So the fundamental assumption is that we can't understand. So general description is given, not an exact description. And then the human mind is attracted. So if one wants, then through the yogic process, one can achieve those places and those states by purifying oneself and awakening the soul ultimately to go even beyond the material world to the spiritual world. For example, the yagyas. There is so much description of the yagyas in the Vedic literature, and how beings from the higher planetary systems, the demigods, the rishis, they would come in those yagyas and accept the offerings in the yagyas. Now, at least of my readings of the scripture and of the readings that I have come across and from hearing from senior devotees, I have not yet still understood how these offerings in the yagyas are actually accepted by the demigods and how they enjoy those offerings. Some descriptions and answers are there, but we don't find exact scientific descriptions of how the offerings disappear and then they appear in the hand of the demigod and what happens to the demigod when he enjoys it. Because those things cannot be understood by the limited mind and senses at our level of consciousness, at our level of understanding with the senses and the mind. So those exacting sciences are not even given to us. But the general description is given that if these yagyas are performed, these mantras are chanted, then these types of personalities will come. And if one does it, then one will realize it. Also, the fundamental principles gradually take a person closer and closer towards the reality of his existence. Like say, for example, the scriptures talk about a healthy body through performing yogasanas or even pranayamas. Contrast to that, we find if one wants a so-called healthy body through the pursuit of modern science, then one is advised to go to health clubs when one can pump iron and will have bulging muscles in a few days. If we see the pictures they put up of healthy people, then they have big muscles tearing out the vests or the t-shirts that they are wearing. It looks actually very ugly and gory to see. And their faces are full of so much stress, all the nerves bursting out. And that's considered to be powerful. It's considered to be very healthy and strong. But most of these people, it's like the 20 minutes of fame. It's just few years they have these muscles, and then after some time they cannot do these workouts and becomes a big flab of mass around them. And most of them, because of the steroids they have been taking, they become so unhealthy. It's a very excruciating existence. On the other hand, the scriptures, they talk about purifying the body. Now if you see a yogi, a healthy yogi, the pictures don't look so attractive. In fact, the most healthy yogis, those who have got mystic powers and who can even travel in different places, if you see the picture in Bhagavad Gita, it's even scary, you know. Long hair and long nails. But an inner development has taken place. There is a deep peace of mind that comes along with the practice of these principles. So the whole goal and endeavor is in a different direction. And therefore the descriptions given in the scriptures about life in general and the universe is completely different. The approach is completely different, because the principles are different and their goals are different. Observable natural phenomena like the motion of the planets was studied mathematically and analyzed in the Vedic literature, in the Vedic culture. But the objective was not to give a final comprehensive description of the universe. Rather, the objective was to provide simple practical methods of dealing with some daily phenomena. That's all. Like the motion of the planets was studied for, say, two purposes. Making some astrological calculations for one's daily practical life, astrology, and for the awareness of the proper timings of religious functions and ceremonies. That's all. There was no other reason why astrology was studied. While modern observational and mathematical astronomy has a whole different fundamental approach. Previously, this astronomy which was studied in the Vedic culture, it fulfilled the needs to relate to higher aspects of reality that cannot be observed in our mundane platform. So there was no question of finding any final mathematical theory. And therefore no efforts were made to that end. Because there was no need, no goal in that direction. And therefore no efforts were also made in that direction. And therefore the mathematical models were kept very simple, very easy to understand for those who wanted to understand them. Because that was what they were intended for. Like nowadays, in modern science, their need is that they want to understand everything and control everything. So they struggle very hard to find perfect mathematical formulae for everything in the universe so they can control it. Say for example, Shamandru was giving a simple understanding that say if this room is 144 square feet, if somebody has a mathematical intelligence, then he can understand that if I have 12 tiles, each of say 12 square feet, then very quickly if I put the 12 tiles, then I can tile this entire floor. So if I mathematically understand this floor, then I have much more control over it. I can do so many things with it. So in this way, the scientists, they want to mathematically understand everything in this universe so they can control every aspect of it. But that was not the goal of the Vedic culture at all, as far as the study of astronomy is concerned. And it was not even possible. They knew it, so they kept it very simple. Like nowadays, it's so funny how the modern astrophysical world works. They weighed they found the weight of the universe. I don't know how. Somehow, on some weighing scale, through some mathematical calculations, sitting in some corner of the Earth, in some laboratory on some computers, they found that the weight of the universe is some particular number. And when they actually calculated the weight of all the planets and all the stars and all the galaxies and all the other bodies, heavenly bodies as they call them, they found that it is an insignificant number compared to the weight of the universe. Insignificant. They were bewildered. What's happening? All the mass of the universe, which can be seen in the form of planets and stars and all the galaxies, when you weigh them, don't ask how, somehow, if you weigh them, it's nothing compared to the mass of the universe. So then they created a new theory that in the vacuum, which is all pervading in the universe, there are some very, very heavy objects and very, very heavy particles which can't be seen, but they are very heavy. And then it contradicted their original theory that in vacuum, there can't be any particles. So, now they are working on another theory. Very soon we'll come up with one. But then this is what happens when you try to understand all the laws of the universe with our mundane mind and senses. In fact, there is a scientist, who said that I want to know the mind of God. We can draw parallels with Chaitanya Leela, that one time Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to his devotees that Prakashananda Saraswati, he is having leprosy, but he does not know it yet. And why is he having this leprosy? Because he is claiming that the Lord has no hands, no legs. He is attacking the form of the Lord. So similarly, scientists, they want to know the mind of God and they want to play God. So this scientist, he wrote very famous books and he claims to be an authority on time. Krishna says, I am the authority on time. Time I am. So in his brief history that he talks about, the knowledge of time that he has, he says that there are certain heavy objects called black holes. What is a black hole? It's a very simple concept. It's just basically a star or a sun which is now dying. And at death, one becomes old and dwindled. So this star becomes old and can't give enough light out. Its gravitational pull just pulls the light back. So from outside, nobody can see the star because no light is coming out. It's all black. But suddenly you go close and there's so much light and you become sucked into that star. So nobody can see who went in. Because that person will never be able to come out. He's stuck. This is just like, you know, when we say there is heaven, there is hell. They say after death, who has gone after death to tell you whether what is there after death? But then the same kind of blind faith has to be applied to black holes. And now, the same scientist says that there are no such thing as black holes. And previously he said that actually we can never go back in time because time is linearly going ahead. And now he has come up with a brand new theory of making a time machine. We are going to go back in time to find out what happened, how God made this universe. Because now the government is not giving any more grants for the linear time theory. So now a new time machine has to be created. So mathematical analysis of this universe was made in the Vedic culture, but the model was kept very simple, knowing the kind of complexities which are going to come at our level of trying to understand. A simple example Sadaputra Prabhu gives. Say, there are two huge buildings in New York City. And somebody wants to go to those buildings and is given an address. Now the address is a two-dimensional address. A lane and some number of the building on the lane. Its length and breadth is given. However, if you want to go to the 50th floor, then that two-dimensional address is not good enough. Because you may reach the building and we may reach that particular site, but you will not be able to see that place because that place is 50 stories above. So an entire new system is required to reach that place. Although you may have your address in hand, a two-dimensional travel is not good enough. A three-dimensional travel is required. The height is also required. Similarly, to approach higher levels of universe, it's not enough to simply understand the laws on this earth. The laws on this earth in two dimensions, three dimensions, need not exist in the higher dimensions like that. And this, another simple example, story he quotes is of the six blind men and the elephant. We know one blind man was holding the legs and he thought that this is a column. One fellow broke his head in with the stomach and he thought this is a very tough wall. One fellow was enjoying on the tail. He said, this is a nice swing. And one fellow was coming down the trunk and he thought that this is a slide. So in this way, the different blind men, they were stuck to their theory that an elephant has to be like a column. And one fellow was saying that I am sliding down. He said, no, you'll break your head. This column is vertical. Sir, the column is vertical at your place. But the trunk, you can slide down because it's a completely different reality. So higher levels of the universe have completely different laws and realities, and therefore trying to understand them at our level is childishness. Then Sadaputra Prabhu goes one step ahead. And he says that if those two buildings are connected on the top of the terrace with gangway or some place, then the person on the 100th floor of one building can go to the 100th floor of the second building in a matter of 2 minutes because he just crosses. But somebody who does not have that facility is on the 100th floor. He has to climb down 100 floors of the building, walk to the second building and climb up the 100 floors. And this is something as simple as two buildings. When we speak of billions of light years of distances, the yogi can just extend his hand and he can pluck a pomegranate in Kabul and eat it. Or he can put his hand on the moon and enjoy the somaras. Or Vamandev can just stretch his leg and push to the end of the universe in just no time when everybody else is just standing and watching. Because they have the facility and the capacity because they know how the 100th floor are connected. They are on a higher level of existence. They have higher powers. But ordinary persons like us at our level of mind and senses just cannot fathom that. Therefore, the Vedic cosmography and the Vedic astronomy is giving such simple ideas to attract our minds, and the process is given of how to achieve it through the Vedic process, through the yogic process. The exact scientific details are not even given because it's not possible, it's not necessary, that's not the goal. Another very important point that the Vedic cosmography, with the Vedic culture, is trying to explain through the understanding of the universe, that is that the higher regions are not devoid of life. In fact, they are populated by a hierarchy of superhuman beings. The original being being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are so many hierarchy of superhumans, demigods, the Saptarishis, as we just read in the purports. So given this perspective, it's natural that the knowledge about the most important aspects of this universe cannot be gained unless we contact those persons who have that higher knowledge. Those who have the superhuman capacities to understand this higher aspects of reality in this universe. Therefore, the Vedic culture is dominated by the idea of receiving knowledge by a chain of disciplic succession from higher sources. Therefore, the Vedic knowledge culture does not give all the descriptions which can be understood by us immediately. Because the stress is that we must surrender to higher authorities who are at higher levels of existence in this universe. Whereas the modern worldview is that what we see is what exists. There's nothing higher above. We are the highest evolved beings. So whatever we know is the best kind of information and knowledge. And that's the premise on which they work. The history of modern science, if we see, is dominated by this culture. Quickly understand on the laws, the best possible laws, and thus create a theory by which mathematically we can explain everything else. That was not the purpose in the Vedic times. The stress and the purpose was humility. Surrender to an authority. Like devotees tell a story of how people in the army are trained. The new person who has joined the army, he is told by the seniors, the authorities, that you go and dig a hole over there. The exact location is given to him. And the exact size of the hole, the diameter, the depth, everything is given. And when the hole is dug, the authority comes and says, "You fool, what have you done here? Is this what I told you to do?" So he says, "Well, then what did you actually tell me to do?" "So I told you to dig a hole there." And then again he goes there and digs a hole exactly of the same dimensions. Again he comes, gets a good deal of chastisement, "You fool, is this what I told you to do?" And from morning to night, he keeps on digging such holes. Somebody may say, this is an insane way of training. But the stress is not to teach him how to dig holes of that particular dimension. The stress is surrender to the authority. That's why that kind of education is given. And then a long lecture is given to them. At the end of the lecture, they are asked, any questions? If anybody raises his hand, they said, okay, now you can go for a 10-kilometer jog with this heavy bag of 10 kilos. So you only asked if there are any questions, and I do have a question. See, before you get the answer, you have to first run. Because the important point which I wanted to explain to you through this entire lecture was that you should have no questions to your authority. Simply surrender. So you have not understood that point. And you have other questions, you know, which are all based on your own speculated ideas. So one may wonder, what is this kind of education? It's abuse. No, but they are the same people who help in the fight against other nations in wars because they have that type of education and they go into the war based on the word of the authority. Because they can't see what's happening in the war. The authorities can see, they know what's happening. They are having more understanding of the war situations. So they simply surrender to their understanding. So therefore the Vedic culture stressing humility and surrender to higher authorities and chain of higher authorities does not give exacting details of the astronomical universe at our levels. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explains that is the difference between philosophical speculation and mental speculation. When the scientists, they want to understand water, initially they thought water is an element. It's an element. Then they realized, oh, water is a compound. There is hydrogen and there is oxygen. And now they are going deeper and deeper and deeper into the understanding of water. One can do even PhD on how water works. Anomalous behavior of water, normal, abnormal. So many behaviors of water is there. But as far as the devotee is concerned, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the taste of water. So devotee's absorption when he or she comes in contact with water is, how can I appreciate Krishna? And he begins his research, a devotee begins his research with the fundamental understanding, Krishna is present here. And I have to somehow appreciate and absorb Krishna's presence in this activity of drinking water. Prabhupada said, the scientists will find out the porous density of the rasgulla, the color of the rasgulla, the weight of the rasgulla, the recipes of the rasgulla, and a devotee will eat the rasgulla and go back home, back to Godhead. You know? So because the purpose is completely different, the whole science, as it is explained, is completely different. So modern view of astronomy and astrology can be considered much, much better than the Vedic static view if we stick to the assumption that the reality of what we see around is simply limited to our senses. However, if the Vedic idea of higher realms of existence is even approximately correct, then it is clear that modern approach has caused our attention to be focused on relatively unimportant issues of modern astronomy and astrology. The issue of the weight of the universe, the different particles in the universe, black holes, they are not useful to our daily practical lives. Like one man, he did a lot of research and he found out a material which he claimed will last for 10,000 years. So he said, I'll build a house which will last for 10,000 years. So another person asked him, sir, will you live for that long? So rather than thinking about, like nowadays, you know, there are so many even so-called pseudo-spiritual societies who keep saying from time to time that the world is coming to end. One society said, Kali Yuga is only 5,000 years, and 5,000 years have already passed, so very soon Pralaya is going to come. So whether Pralaya comes or not, whether the whole world is destroyed or not, one fact is for sure that we are going to be destroyed. So rather than worrying about who am I and what is the goal of my life and how I am going to be destroyed and what's going to happen to me afterwards, we are worried about world peace and how the world will be destroyed and what should we do so that the world can be kept nicely. It's very unimportant, useless issues. The entire human life is wasted in the name of progress. So if you accept that this limited scientific view of what we see as the three dimensions is all in all, then yes, definitely we are many nice exacting sciences. Like one time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he writes in TKG diary that he asked Prabhupada, how can the earth, the Bhumandal, be a flat surface? We are traveling by aeroplanes. We know that if we go to America from India, through the Middle East and the European countries, then we can reach America. And we can also reach USA through the other route from the east, from Hong Kong, Japan, that way. So the world has to be a round sphere. How do we understand that the scriptures speak about sometimes the Bhumandal being flat and the earth being round? And the only answer Srila Prabhupada gave him is, you must have faith in your spiritual master. Now sometimes when we hear this, it might, at least to a neophyte like me, it's a struggle. That it's a fact that if the earth was not a perfect sphere and the time zones were not perfectly as the modern astronomers know it, then how would the airplane industry be able to land airplanes at exact times as they predict to all over the earth in so many different cities? So modern astronomy has given such exacting details which many of the Vedic texts don't give. So in that sense, modern astronomy is definitely much, much better. However, this is true only if we see the world in these three dimensions or the four dimensions of limited reality. Like for example, the eclipses. The eclipses are said to be the sun or the moon coming in the way of each other. And Vedas speak about Rahu eating up the sun and Rahu eating up the moon by a blessing of Indra. This is too much, you know, to accept. But the fact is that in the three-dimensional reality, it's a fact that the sun and the moon may be coming in their different positions and therefore the eclipses are taking place. But on higher dimensionals of reality, the fact is that Rahu is doing his work. And that is being understood by us in this way, in our limited reality. A simple example, Ayurveda sees this body much, much differently than the allopathic science. Because the allopathic science sees this body as a gross bundle of chemicals. So allopathy also works, because some certain chemicals in the body don't work. It works for that particular limited range of science. But when we speak of holistic health, then one has to understand different principles. There are higher different principles of how the body is made up of higher forces of kapha, vata, pitta. There are different airs within the body. In fact, those airs are not the ordinary air that is outside. Like the Vedas, they describe that the planets are floating in air. And that's the only reason why the planets float. Now, modern science says that there is no air outside except for the atmosphere of the earth. There is no air. So how can the planets be floating in air? But the air that the Vedic scriptures talk about begins from beyond the clouds. So that air is different from the air of our experience. Or Sadaputru explains there is an ocean of milk. Now that milk is different from our experience of milk. That milk after some time doesn't get spoiled. Or doesn't become curd. Suddenly, you know, put lemon into it, the whole ocean became curd, you know. It's not like that. That is the experience of our milk here. Prabhupada writes in the purport that if a person is sick and he's given cow urine to drink because he has liver disease, you give him cow milk, he will die. Because he has no experience of drinking cow milk only because he's so sick that he can never drink cow milk. But that doesn't mean the cow cannot give milk. The cow gives different substances which are useful for different people. So we at our level here who think that there are certain laws, it need not be true for the laws in the entire universe. So it is true that Rahu also does his work for the eclipses, and it is true that the earth and the sun are also doing their work for their eclipses. But both of them exist at different planes of reality. So unless we expand our minds, expand our ways of understanding the truth, we will never be able to appreciate the Vedic concept. And we also understand the goals of the Vedic concept. We will never be able to appreciate it. Like even in modern science, they had to expand from time to time. Newton's theory said that everything is particle. Atoms cannot be explained like that. So Einstein said everything is a wave. So now they became confused. Is it a particle or is it a wave? Sometimes it works like a particle, sometimes it works like a wave. They said, okay, dual theory. Both works. In completely different realms of truths. Similarly, both works. Modern science works. If it works, when it works, with whatever theories they know, in a three-dimensional reality. But at a higher dimensional reality, we have to take shelter of the Vedic scriptures, because the fundamental assumption, number one, is that we cannot understand the material world with our limited mind and senses. Number two, the idea behind Vedic cosmography and astrology is that it's simply to help us for our daily life and to help us understand the religious functions and the rites when they are to be performed. And number three, the Vedic knowledge stresses humility and faith in higher authorities, which was very beautifully exemplified in the life of Srinivas Thakur. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, how do you maintain yourself? You have such a large family and you don't seem to be working, because the modern idea of working is the more you work, the more money you get. That's a modern assumption. The Vedic assumption is different. So Srinivas Thakur said, I just clap three times. One, two, three. He said, what theory is this? to fill your whole household with food? Said, yes, one, two, three. And if it doesn't, I'm so convinced, if it doesn't happen, I'll tie a rock around my neck and I'll drown myself into the Ganges. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started dancing with ecstasy and said, Srinivas, I'm so amazed at your conviction that I give you the benediction. That even if Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, becomes poor and she has to beg from door to door, in your house there will be no scarcity. Because the whole goal and purpose of his Vedic life is different. Of course, unless we have that faith, unless we have that devotion, that science will not work for us. If you clap three times, something else might happen, because our level of reality is different. Our faith is different. But the fact is, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we follow the process that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given, the chanting of the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Plus, in the specific mood that he has requested us to chant, more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, giving all respects to others and accepting no respect, honor, prestige for oneself. Then when this chanting works, then the whole different science of Krishna consciousness awakens. It can happen only by the mercy of the Lord. One cannot barge into the science like Srivas's mother-in-law tried. Influence doesn't work here. Money doesn't work here. She wanted to enjoy Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes by hiding into the closet because she was living in that house. It doesn't work. Srivas pulled her by the hair and threw her out. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was not feeling ecstasy. Rather, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to show that it is only possible by his mercy to appreciate his pastimes and enter into his pastimes. He showed two extreme examples. On one hand, an austere, only milk-drinking brahmachari respected by the entire town of Navadvip, which was filled with cultured people. Srivas was also a very highly cultured personality. Everyone respected him and therefore he was allowed inside. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kicked him out. He said, by drinking milk you cannot understand God. It's only by mercy. So when he was grateful for at least a few moments of darshan allowed, then that gratitude attracted the heart of the Lord. And the other extreme is Dukhi. Dukhi was a simple lady, didn't have any material qualifications, and still Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave her mercy, made her Sukhi, happy. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed it's only by mercy that one comes into the process, it's by mercy that one continues in the process, and it's by mercy that one achieves perfection in the process. So we have to do our bit and leave to Krishna the remaining. So that is the goal of the Vedas, the scriptures, the Supreme Lord. And therefore, these kinds of descriptions are given in the Vedic scriptures about the universe and about our life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. It's quite late, so we'll stop here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.